folks, welcome back. This is Pádraic from the Humble Coach Podcast. So we're back with episode, I think it's 37 at this stage. And I'm joined by a fantastic coach from the other end of the world. His name is Darren Ellis. Darren, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure.
I think a number of the kind of CrossFit crew would have a bit of awareness of who you are and some of the athletes you would work with and stuff, but could you give a little bit of a background on yourself, just a little bio potentially, and just speak a little bit about what you're currently doing and what led you up to this stage, kind of coaching wise, in the CrossFit realm, if that's okay?
Sure. Well, as we were just discussing before this started, we're both sort of reasonably OG, not super OG, but 2007, 2008. One of the first in our respective countries to get into this stuff. And you might be the same, Pádraic, but I thought it was pretty stupid when I first came across
yeah, it was a bit much.
CrossFit.com didn't make sense. Who does 100 pull-ups?
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure I just sort of took one look, discounted it, moved on back to my sort of university trained strength conditioning. And I'm not even sure why I got back to it, what made me take another look, but once I took that second look, I was done. I was hooked. And, you know, I had my friends doing it and colleagues doing it, all my clients doing it. And I was running boot camps outdoors at the time. So then all those clients started doing it. And as winter closed in, I realized it was a good opportunity to, A, get a roof over my head and get out of the rain, and B, start implementing more movements, barbell, pull-ups, you know, the things we weren't able to access outside. And I think it seems more rapid than it perhaps was, but it feels, when I look back and sort of try to do the maths, that first CrossFit workout to opening CrossFit New Zealand was 3 months.
Oh, wow. Nice.
It was that rapid revelation.
Excellent.
And I often say to people that CrossFit isn't perfect per se, but it's closer to perfect than anything else. And the thing that's always been discounted, particularly in the realm of science, when we're trying to, you know, study fitness in a lab, is the crowd, the group mentality, right? That that motivation, that inspiration, that competition, and it's never been properly studied before. And I think, and this is something that had been so overlooked. And it was so powerful. And so, yeah, we just took to it. But, yeah, first CrossFit gym in New Zealand for nearly a year.
Nice.
There were other people doing it. And so, much like yourself, we'd hunt them out and we'd catch up for weekend workouts and full culty. And, you know, now I honestly remember speaking to someone who'd done a bit of maths, and he thinks that New Zealand had more CrossFit gyms per head of population than anywhere in the world. We're up around 140 gyms, I think.
At the moment?
For,
wow.
For just over 4 million people.
That's a lot. That's pretty good.
The entire country is not much bigger than a large city. So it's 140 odd gyms, and they're still opening. So, yeah, it's fantastic. And I just think it appeals to our nature, you know, New Zealand's nature.
Yeah, definitely.
But I'm turning the short story into a long one.
That's all good.
fast forward, you know, 10 years now, and still absolutely love coaching, still love everything that we do. And we have a second location as well. And just I guess things that I'm doing as well as, which is helping keep the passion alive, and, you know, new fingers, sorry, new pies to put the fingers in, working with the crew at the training plan, which is Yami Tikkanen. And that's quite good fun. Been doing that for a few years. And my contribution is some athlete support and sort of specifically based around nutrition, warm-up movement-based stuff, that sort of thing. And so it was great fun to go to the games last year and support live, so to speak. And a little bit of remote coaching, a little bit of programming is the latest venture.
Okay.
Which I guess I'm kind of jumping on the bandwagon, the same as so many people with affiliate-based programming. But it's definitely a passion. You know, we've seen a lot of sort of opinions on CrossFit and how to program it, and I guess, yeah, throwing my hat in the ring with that sort of thing.
Nice. Well, that's excellent. That's it. Like, there's a lot of good stuff there. I mean, a huge amount of that would resonate with me. Like, I think, like you said, the at the very beginning, it was hilarious. I remember I did Fran. I was working in a commercial gym at the time, and I remember doing Fran. It took me 14 minutes, and I was like, what the heck is going on here? Like, and I was one of the main coaches, and I was sitting in the corner going, what the fuck? This is mad. and then trying to pursue, and then it was more like hearing about this bouncer doing it and such is doing it, and it was just hilarious stuff at the time. But yeah, I got to the stage where we had 15-20 people on the beach and stuff, just randomly. Just people are like, what are you doing on there? We're like, oh, we're just throwing a few rocks. That's all good. And just a few kettlebell swings and blah, blah, blah. But that was a lot of fun. So I think we have similar kind of run-ins, I suppose, into the whole thing. But there's a couple of things I'll touch on first that you mentioned. And I've just kind of changed the gym I work in at the moment in CrossFit Galway. We've just recently kind of changed the programming, and it'll be interesting to chat to you a little bit about this, I think, in a while. But you're speaking about CrossFit being, I suppose, not perfect, but as perfect as you can get at the moment. And I think, I don't know if you could speak a little bit about this, but I think that the reason I love CrossFit so much is, first of all, I suppose there's such a broad range of elements to it, and I've spoken to a couple people about this recently, that unless you win the games, and even if you win the games, you can't really beat it. So you're essentially always trying to make progress within it. So it's such a huge game that you're always going to be able to make progress somewhere. But it's a really interesting one like that, that's as perfect of a scenario as you could get, something that you can never ever get to. But you can pick up loads of good, I like to use the kind of video game analogy, loads of good coins on the way, and have a lot of fun. I don't know what you think on those kind of things.
Oh, I fully subscribe to it. And I have a martial arts background from my youth, and I often use analogies relating to that. So, one is that when you become the black belt, which is sort of what everyone wants, but you achieve your black belt and you suddenly realize that you don't know anything at all. hopefully you realize this at least. And you decide to go all the way back to white belt and start learning it properly and pursuing true mastery, which you understand that you will never attain. Mm-hmm. And that herein lies the appeal, because we don't want to get to the end, because what do we do when we get to the end?
Yeah, like,
and that's what's so amazing, you know. Mm-hmm. And if we sort of track that sideways to the clients who are coming to us, they're being taught to always have a start and finish, 6-week challenge, 12-week nutrition thing. Get shredded for summer in 8 weeks, and everything's got this time limit, and what next? And they're expecting to have those results in their time, and of course they're bitterly disappointed, and they just try another 6-week challenge. So yeah, I love that pursuit of mastery. Kenny Kane from formerly CrossFit LA, now Oak Park, he talks about it a lot, and we've had some good discussions around that aspect, and I just absolutely love it. He's a martial artist in background as well. So that's what's so fantastic about it. And there's a lot of criticism about the CrossFit programming, of course. My favorite one that I hear a lot is CrossFit doesn't do X, Y, Z, which, you know, is a version of they, you know, who are they?
Yeah.
It's always they do this or whatever, you know.
Exactly.
It's not that CrossFit doesn't do lateral movement and doesn't do single limb work and doesn't do rotational movement.
Yeah.
One look at .com now, but particularly in the old days, will definitely prove otherwise. It's the affiliates that are doing that, well, that aren't doing that stuff.
I agree.
And then blaming .com and why is it having this course? Because all the movements, like the single limb stuff and the rotational stuff, it's phenomenal, make people strong and resilient, but it's really hard to test competitively. You know, how do you do Russian twists for time or single leg Romanian deadlifts?
It's not very sexy.
And try to get someone to max it out at 1 RM, you can't. But they're fantastic movements. But of course, all the movements that aren't there, all the straight line linear stuff's fantastic for the CrossFit Games.
Yeah.
That's interesting, isn't it? And the owners themselves get stuck into training everyone like a games athlete.
Yeah.
And so it's our fault, you know, because I'll take some of the blame, and we did it.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the early days when we got hooked on the open, and you know, I was on the games track and trying to get to regionals and all that stuff, and we had way more in kipping and rebound box jumps and technical deadlifts than we probably should have in the old days, but we learned quickly, and I just think some people are still learning.
Yeah,
it's probably more than we just remember the basics. You know, like that. I think it's that overreaction and underreaction. When I discovered CrossFit, I threw everything I'd learned from my master's degree out the window and went full CrossFit. You know, never got full retard.
Yeah.
And so now let's get back to some of that stuff. And I think there's a lot of gyms, a lot of boxes haven't learned or never encountered the basics of strength conditioning. You know, they've come in via a level one track. Previously a member of a CrossFit gym, and I'm all for growth of the affiliates. I think it's a great thing, but if I had any criticism, it's that every box that opens that is opened by a 24-year-old games hopeful is probably making things work.
Well, I totally agree on that. I mean, using my own example, like I didn't do my level one for ages and ages and ages, and I was like, we were essentially coaching people, and we were like kind of unofficial coaching, I suppose, but I'd been coaching since I was 17, so I was like in my early 30s by the time I got certified, and I'm like, it's not I'm not that stressed about it. I think once I got a couple of years in, you realize, hold on a second, I have to mesh all of the other elements of my sporting background or my coaching background into this, and I have to try and tweak it a little bit for this person to come and this person here. Oh, what the hell am I going to do with this person? And just to speak on what you're getting towards, the people that we get in at the moment into the gym, they and to come back to one of your earlier points, I think the real beauty of it is that, as well as the communal element and the real good group dynamic, it basically is this very long game that you can really, really enjoy for a long time. So you don't actually have to be in a rush to get this 6-week thing done or this 12-week thing done, because then you can actually slow down and really attack these elements rather than having to try and rush through them. And I'm thinking of like a marathon, for example, having to get your big long days in every 2 or 3 weeks or something like that. Whereas something like a muscle up, you're like, well, if you're on a green band, like, give yourself a couple of years, you know, like, give it a chance. You've got to have a few different plans going on. So I think it's a really nice thing that there's, it's challenging, I suppose, from a coaching perspective, that we have so many people now that are not, that don't have a huge awareness of what CrossFit is or the type of methodology or the whole background or anything like that. They're just coming in very, very fresh. But they're also coming in with they're also coming in with an awful lot of, I like to look at it as white space that's easily attacked if we have a good strategy for going that way. But I think that's where, could you speak a little bit about, I suppose, what you currently do in your own gyms, and especially having worked with some of the highest level athletes, with the training plan, guys, what kind of a difference do you see, I suppose the gym's going in? Is it much more of that straightforward general exercise physiology type of a situation, and bringing in a lot of the rotational movements, bringing in a lot of single leg work, and very straightforward exercise science, I suppose, that's very, very solid? Or is there too many gyms now pushing towards the kind of games buzz, or at least the kind of online track, nearly, if that makes sense? What are you thinking on that?
I guess first comment is thank fuck for the end of regionals. Because we might see some of this start to level out, you know.
Yeah. True.
Along with CrossFit.com's push themselves to get the focus back on health.
Yeah.
Which is amazing, and I think it'd be really helpful. So
definitely.
yeah, perhaps it, yeah, we need to have a few people's dreams ripped out from under them, and we might start to get a bit of sense back to some of this. But yeah, it's, I mean, the main, I think the main difference is a simple one. It's volume and it's complexity and it's overall intensity. Those are the differences that have always been the differences. And it's just, yeah, I think we just need a reminder of those differences sometimes. Coming back to what you were saying was a little bit earlier, the people that are coming in now, the whole graph has kind of shifted in the sense that back in our day when we started, 2008, 2009, the peak of the popularity, I think, at least in our country, was around 11, 12.
Yeah.
And people were coming in with fairly active and they were interested in this kind of underground thing.
Yeah.
And, early days, we chucked them straight into class. Then it was a group intro of some sort. And they did just fine. And they figured it out. They did their own research, you know, and they subscribed to the journal on their own bat. They watched the videos. They entered comps and they figured it out. I can still remember, I'm trying to think what year it was. It was probably around 2010 or 11, where I was showing every second person this mystical thing called a butterfly pull-up. They wanted to see it in, like, live.
Yeah.
Can you show me this butterfly pull-up thing? And now you can go to competitions and the intermediate category are rocking out three-minute Frans.
Yeah.
And people are programming Fran for intermediate.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It has.
However, that's kind of one end of the tale, but the people coming in the back end, the people starting, they are more deconditioned, they're more stressed, they're more overweight, they're more injured, they're getting less sleep, they're eating worse, you know, than ever before. And that's the disconnect, is that you've now got more people who do the butterfly pull-up than any, you know, than ever before.
Yeah.
But the bulk of the people are coming in who've got no chance of ever doing one of those in their lives, probably, because of the fact that they're 50 and they're broken.
Yeah.
You know, it's just there's no point in putting them on a 30-year track to getting the a pull up.
Yeah.
If it happens, of course, I will go there. But chances are, we've got to get 20 kilos of body fat off them. We've got to fix that shoulder. We've got to get them squatting to depth without pain.
Yeah.
So they can play with their grandkids. That's where I see it happening. Coming back to that original question, remove some complexity, remove volume, or decrease it. Decreasing the intensity is probably one of the bigger ones or bigger changes that we've been making recently. And what I mean by that is that some days are not hard workouts.
Yeah.
And trust me, My OG members, the people who've been with me 11, 12 years, they bailed me out and they said, what's going on? I feel like the programming's changed. It's not as hard as it used to be.
Yeah.
And my response to them has been, if it was as hard as it used to be, you would not be here still.
You would be broken.
Fact. You would have adrenal fatigue or something similar. You would have an injury. You would be just plain exhausted, and you wouldn't have the mental fortitude to come to training anymore if you'd be doing it until your eyeballs bled every day for 12 years.
Yeah.
And it's hard for them to understand, and even myself, right, because that's what got us hooked.
Oh, yeah, very much.
The stuff that left us in a heap is what sucked us all in, and sometimes I feel bad for denying people that experience. You know, and it goes all the way back to the start where, Coach Glassman made up Fran and spewed, then went and got his friend and made him spew, and then they went and got another guy and made him spew. It's the absolute backbone of the entire movement. And now I'm bringing people in and going, first session, we're just going to talk. We don't even do a workout anymore.
No.
But different people, they're not the, however old, Coach and his mates were, they're not young gymnasts who rode the bikes everywhere and was super active.
I think
we just can't do that.
I'm actually quite a similar spot to you. Like, I've changed the programming recently and been meaning to for a number of months now, and it just got to the stage where I was like, okay, we need to push it here. And I actually noticed on your own gym's website, you have a fitness and a performance. And I've actually not, I didn't borrow it off you now, mind, if at all. I didn't actually know you were doing it. But we have a similar scenario, like a fitness and a performance type of an element. And I've had the same. I've had some members really, really unhappy with it and the whole lot. And I'm like, look, but one of the really interesting things that I found has been some of the more experienced people who would do the performance elements, I might cut the fitness, I suppose, time cap to like 15 minutes rather than 20 minutes for the performance athletes or members. What's happening now is really interesting. Whereas before, the newer people or the kind of the potentially weaker people were getting squished all together, and the performance guys were killing it. They were finishing 10 minutes, and the person who's just getting started was like, oh my God, I'm just terrible at this, blah, blah, blah. Now it's interesting because they're seeing the actual really, really good people suffering quite a lot at the far end, and they've still done their work, but they're also seeing exactly what it needs to be quite competitive. And it's meaning that they're not getting overly fatigued by it. It's just the appropriate amount of stimulus. There's not loads of snatches in, there's not loads of handstand push-ups in for them. Whereas some of the performance crew, you're like, well, okay, if you want to start doing this kind of stuff, we need to start testing this, like, and checking out what you're up to. But that's really interesting that you mentioned that, because I'm in a similar kind of boat at the moment. Could you speak a little bit about, and I've read a few of your blogs that are really interesting to, and like yourself, you're a fan of analogies to an extent. But
that's how I talk.
So speaking of, we'd say, for example, the like gymnastics. So the gymnastics, and going back to the general kind of the long life or lifelong fitness orientation of CrossFit and the functional fitness world in general. Trying to convince somebody that strict gymnastics is vital for them, I think it can be a really hard sell. But have you any particular tactics that you like to employ when someone's mad for butterfly, but they barely have two strict pull-ups? Have you any thoughts on that?
We've been trying to make it cool.
Yeah.
And that's, it's required some patience, and it has required some days where people are going, you know, this is shit. Here I am doing my banded pull-ups and my push-ups to a box. But we sort of got through the other side where some people started to make progress. I did do a specialty gymnastics class recently, which was a small one but successful, in the sense that I wanted to show some people at the beginner intermediate level the satisfaction of drilling the basics.
Yeah.
You know, so that was hollow holds and handstand shoulder taps and hanging scapular pulls and you know, strict toes to bar and handstand planks and seal walks, all the really classic gymnastics strength stuff. And they thrived on it. We're getting together with, you know, the hard sessions, that isometric tension is just so brutal.
Yeah.
And you do it for set after set.
Routes.
And so that was really cool because, of course, they went back into class and were raving about it and asking when the next one was and so on and so on. So that was a little bit of sort of espionage on my end, you know, planting the seed that way.
Excellent.
Through the members. That worked really well. But yeah, for the main part, Porrig was we just had to be patient and just get it cool.
Yeah.
And that required fairly repetitive programming of it. But as soon as some people started to make progress, you know, we started to get there and quickly backing it up with blog posts, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
Constantly talking about it in class. And I've been talking a lot to people these days, you know, community is a big word in CrossFit, but the word that I am using more is culture, and there's just, you know, a slight difference between community and culture, and, you know, community is sort of who we are, and culture is how we do things. And Seth Godin has a great saying, people like us do things like this. And you're trying to attract the people who want to do, you know, who want to be like us and do things like us.
Yeah.
And it's just slowly ticking away. You know, it's hard. And I've lost members for yeah. sure. You know, I'm not ashamed or afraid to admit that we've lost members who have come to me and saying, why aren't we tap and go squat snatching?
Yeah.
You know, every third day. Why aren't we basically do very high volume of kipping handstand push-ups and just flat out this workout seemed pretty easy.
Yeah.
And I like to, I think I'm going to quote someone direct, you know, I really just like to come in and get smashed after work, you know?
Yeah.
And my answer to their voice is, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. But the problem is you'll only probably do that stuff for about 2 years.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I can't be bothered devoting my energy to you if you're only going to be around for 2 years. This is a gym that people join and stay at forever. And I point up on the wall where we've got all these 5-year plaques,
yeah.
you know, many of whom have been with me for 12 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, this is who we want. And if it's kind of freeing to be able to speak very frankly with people these days.
Yeah.
This is who we want. This is how we get the results we get.
Mm-hmm.
I know that doing Diane every second day and Amanda the days in between is fun. It's just that it won't work. It won't work. No, or it will work until it stops, until it doesn't. And you know, whether that's 1 month, 1 year,
mm-hmm.
10 years, at some point, definitely 100% will stop. You know, and I'm sure you've had conversations with other owners and athletes, and everyone's speaking the same language. Every time I go to a comp, my favorite thing about going to competitions is speaking to other owners and.
Mm-hmm.
The topic is the same everywhere.
Yeah.
All the owners are getting into functional bodybuilding or EU portal stuff.
Yeah.
Or taking up triathlons or ocean swimming.
Yeah.
And just backing off because it's too hard. Yeah. It's too hard to go that hard all the time.
Yeah. Well, I think even it's good. Like, I think it's even interesting. Like, even going back to the very start of our conversation, speaking about .com, and I remember distinctly looking at a number of, like, when I got into CrossFit, I started kind of really I ate and breathed everything CrossFit. Like, read every single CrossFit journal. I think up to around 2012, maybe 2014 or something. There wasn't a journal article that I hadn't read. Or a video I hadn't watched. Like, there was literally nothing. Because I remember distinctly going back over a couple of things. I'm like, this is such a new video. No, it's not. I watched this like 2 years ago. But thinking of some of the workouts, like, one of the first workouts is practice handstands for 45 minutes. People nowadays go bananas when we put 10 minutes EMOMs in of handstand holds for 30 seconds. So I'm like, 45 minutes is crazy.
Oh, man. I have to practice handstands for 10 minutes so I can get to the MetCon. Oh well, I'll deal with it. I'll put up with this.
And
that's exactly what I'm saying. It's like we can make that stuff a little cooler. I'm still learning on tricks, simple stuff like just make sure the music's good.
Mm.
Get the banter going in between sets of strict handstand push-ups and pull-ups, and just make those sessions fun.
Yeah.
I
think that's actually really interesting. Go for it.
Oh, sorry. I was saying simple things like brief the class on that part, and perhaps don't brief the MetCon just yet, so they're not even thinking about it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Get them started on that part. It's all the focus, and then pull them back and go, okay, guys, we're going to do something to finish off, and it's X, Y, and Z, you know. But put the entire class focus on the work that we're doing, on the strict work, and just get that buy-in, have fun with it.
I agree. Yeah,
sorry, what were you saying?
No. I'm totally on that. I think we're quite like-minded in the approach. I mean, I think it obviously comes through an evolution of dealing with different people and even the evolution of the sport itself and the general type of a training mentality. I suppose using the likes of not that I would always use the Olympics or anything like that, but when you put gymnastics or you put something like that into a context of an Olympic orientation or something like that. So something like a muscle up, and then you look at gymnasts doing it, or you look at the pommel horse or something like that. I don't know if people an awful lot of the time really appreciate the difficulty of that kind of stuff. The same as they would someone doing a 2.5-hour marathon the difficulty of that compared to running around the block five times, it's extremely difficult. Like, so it's more that they're the gymnastics type of element and some of those interesting skills, like even getting like I put in recently a 100 rep challenge, and it had to be, you could pick a movement, whatever weight you wanted, it had to be done in one rep at a time. So it was very much like if you're doing a snatch, you had to choose like maybe 50-60% of your one rep max, and you had to do an individual rep every time for the 100 reps. People were like, oh, I'm going to do sets of 10. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, you just do one rep, set up, do well. And a few people were like, Jesus Christ, this is really hard. But they're now going like, my God, my collarbone's busted from all the power cleans. But now, I guarantee you, when they come in a couple of days later, they're like, well, I just PB'd my power clean. Well, who knew? So all of this kind of stuff is really nice, but it's very difficult to get that level of buy-in unless you really show the extremes, I think. And like you were saying about some of the isometric stuff and some of the steadier controlled elements, it can be challenging, but it's got to be humbling to really push people towards the actual good stuff. Yeah. I think in that context.
Yeah, for sure. And it's back to that culture thing. And, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's letting members go, as I said, coaches, of sort of moved coaches on,
yeah.
who were too caught up in their journey as an athlete,
mm-hmm.
and you know, it became obvious that they were just using the gym as a place to train,
yeah,
and exactly. to, you know, get free training and a bit of cash,
mm-hmm.
and they were not contributing,
mm-hmm.
You know, good vibes to the culture, and if anything, they were, you know, they were decreasing it because you know, every coach has their followers,
mm-hmm.
and their fans and their friends, and so, you know, if you've got the wrong type of coach in your facility, then they're going to move that culture the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of different things, yeah, the programming, and hey, I'm not going to claim, but the way fitness and performance, that's CJ Martin from Invictus.
Yeah.
I've known him a long time,
mm-hmm.
and we opened our gyms very similar time,
yeah,
and so both and both heavily influenced by James Fitzgerald and that sort of thing, and classic strength conditioning.
As am I. Yeah.
He always fitness performance competition kind of thing, and
yeah,
yeah, we changed that very early on. It's funny actually. I remember a little story. When I first did it, mm-hmm. I didn't want to just copy CJ. So what yeah. can I call these things instead? And I can't 100% remember what I did, but I think I did something like. I did three, and it was something like competition, fitness, and then I did lifestyle.
Yeah.
Because hey, everyone's joining for a better lifestyle, right? Yeah. That was the conversation. Like, hey, oh well, everyone's joining just to be a little bit fitter and have a better lifestyle. But at the time, and probably still now, lifestyle was too soft a word, you know. Yeah. No one wanted to do the lifestyle workouts because they stuck in their own heads. And so that was an exercise in poor branding.
Yeah.
No one wanted to do the lifestyle workouts. It'd be interesting to see if I try that now, to see if I get better buy-in, because people are starting to realize, you know, the power of movement and recovery-based stuff.
Definitely.
At the time of 2010 or 11, it was a no-go. So we went back to the tried and tested fitness performance.
Yeah. Well, I was in the same boat. I was thinking, I was like, well, I'm just going to get this, like, I'm going to call it like health and performance. And then I was like, well, no, I'll stay with the fitness for the moment. I might even just call it health and fitness. Just really annoyed people. Yeah. They're like, where's the performance? Yeah. And you're like, well, you're not going hard enough on this. On the fitness one.
Yeah, plenty of the thing about our fitness workouts is as I said, we remove some of the complexity.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is you can push hard.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I'm lucky enough that I've got a lot of, I'm thinking that just in my head now, two of my first athletes will do the fitness programming on the regular.
Yeah.
And it's a fantastic example, and I'm super grateful that they do that. Mm-hmm. And they prove to everyone that you don't, you know, that the aim isn't necessarily to do performance. That's not, when you walk in, you're not trying to get fit enough so you can do performance workouts.
Yeah.
You're always just trying to get fitter than you were yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And any of the work that's on the board, on the whiteboard, will do that.
Yeah.
The thing is that if it's tap and go snatches or overhead squats or a really high volume of pull-ups, you simply won't be able to do them fast enough or enough of them to get fit.
You're just going to stand looking at the bar for 10 minutes. Look, exactly.
Yeah. So look to the left where it's got burpees or...
it's got work.
Slam balls and power snatches and go hard. And you'll get a better workout.
Yeah.
And that's how I explain it a lot. You know, we're trying to get people fitter.
Yeah.
And so fitness, I can take performance off the board tomorrow.
Mm.
And
so get all of my members
continue to get fitter.
Yeah.
Definitely. Performance just offers a chance for people who've started to get the basics really good to explore new things, which is important. You know, as we talked about the variety right back at the start of this conversation. So they get the chance to do squat snatches occasionally. They get a chance to play around with yesterday's strict muscle ups. But that's all it is. And then the other thing that I do that is, I guess, quite different is, again, it's the simple sort of physiology stuff. When someone's fresh to strength training, they are not going to make any kind of adaptations doing 1RMs and low rep lifts. They simply don't have the motor control to do so. So there's no point programming for the entire gym work up to a 1RM back squat. Because although Mary, who's 50 and has 3 kids and has never done strength training in her life, although she will work up to a weight that is very hard and she will say, I can't lift anymore, physiologically, neurologically, she's capable of more. She just can't access the motor units to do it. So she hasn't really had much of a workout. And you've probably seen that in the past, right, where we say things like I don't know, it's power snatch work up to a heavy single in 20 minutes. And at 12 minutes, you've got a bunch of people sort of putting their bars away. What's going on? Oh, well, I'm done. I got as heavy as I can. They've maxed out. And they haven't even got a bead of sweat on them.
Yeah.
And then you look over at some of your better athletes and they're sort of, hey, coach, I've got 4 more sets at least.
Yeah,
sweat like dogs.
Yeah,
working so hard. So why not give performance built to a heavy snatch, for example? But on the fitness side of things, we could say I want a complex snatch. Let's do 3 snatch grip deadlifts.
Yeah.
Let's do 2 hang power snatches and 1 overhead squat. For
example, Darren, I literally
so they get a bit more volume.
I literally did that in one of the workouts last week. Like, literally that exact
thing. Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Then you're a genius, just like me.
I think so.
It's so simple. It really is simple, you know.
Yeah, very much. I agree.
And to come back to the back squat example, same thing, but, you know, using those repetitions. So performance will build to a heavy triple, but the point of going 3 reps for someone who's new to it, so it will build to a heavy 6 or even better. We'll do 5 working sets of 6. And now that newer athlete is getting 30 good, solid repetitions. Again, it's science that, you know, as you do more time and attention, you recruit more motor units. So they need sets of 6, sets of 8, sets of 10 before they actually get any kind of stimulus.
Yeah.
Now we're also getting that magical sweat happening, which, you know, sometimes they need that sort of that simple signal that they're doing good work. And the performance crew can work the 80 triple, but have the mature physiological, you know, set up to get to kind of wring the work out of those 3 reps. You know, they will get a hard workout.
Definitely.
But if you're not advanced enough to do that, you shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. We could talk about this for a long time, but I'll move on to another question. I think this might be a little bit more. Well, I suppose appropriate for your current, like, not necessarily the programming element that you're going into, but your previous experience and your most recent experience with some of the higher level games athletes and the programming and stuff. Could you speak a little bit about nutrition for both health and then also for performance, or the kind of vice versa? Have you noticed any particular trends? Obviously, we're quite happy that CrossFit HQ are kind of pushing towards the health orientation a lot more in the recent past. And upcoming future, which I think is going to be really, really interesting. I don't know if I fully agree with some of the tactics necessarily, but I don't think it's a bad thing at all. Could you speak a little bit about your thoughts on the orientation towards a lot more health, and at least especially with nutrition towards health?
Yeah,
if you could.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, there's huge difference. It's a little like this last topic where, you know, you have sort of a group of people who best fit in the fitness programming and a group of people who might train towards performance programming. When you're training for a sport, you've got completely different demands. And the, you know, the purpose of a sport is to win, to fuel yourself to best output. And so it's completely different to creating a body that is capable of handling the stresses of day-to-day life and you know, and being able to thrive with it. And I guess the main difference is probably, if I was trying to sum it up, and I hadn't really thought about it like this before until now, but certainly someone who's eating for health is probably eating less, as in less meals per day. They are eating, as a result, less food, and they're certainly eating a lot less carbohydrate. And that's probably, in a nutshell, that would be the main thing. You know, the performance-based athlete, the competition-based athlete, is eating to fuel, which is actually a term I kind of hate, because you don't really fuel.
No.
You don't really fuel CrossFit workouts. You know, you'll fuel a 2-hour run.
Yeah.
If you eat some food beforehand, but you don't fuel, even a fairly high level CrossFit athlete's workout is still probably going to be an hour, 90 minutes. You know, they'll break it up, they'll come back again. But you kind of fuel training with the food you've eaten a week across that week leading up to it. You know, exactly. It's always a cumulative thing. So that's one sort of bugbear of mine is you know, fueling anything. Unless we're in the midst of competition. So, yeah, the average person who joins a CrossFit affiliate should be very, very low in carbs. And I don't say no carbs.
No.
That's important. It's lower carbohydrate. You know, it's a lower carbohydrate, not a low or a no carbohydrate diet, although that could be of use to many people as well.
Definitely.
And it's simply because we just have no need for them. We just have no need for them. And, you know, we're in the 21st century, more people than ever are sitting at a desk for 9 hours. And then they're coming in and they're smashing out across the workout. And they're wondering why they're not really getting the changes they're after. And it's because they're offsetting it. They're offsetting their training by more inactivity than the human population has ever seen.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, it's pretty simple. Eat real food. It's you know, it's a fitness in my own words kind of deal.
Definitely.
Eat protein, eat vegetables, eat healthy fats. If you had done some hard training, that would be a good time to eat the meal that contains the greatest amount of carbohydrate in your day, so that you can make good use of it, and without getting into the physiological and biological side of, you know, being better tolerant of carbohydrate and sugar and that sort of thing at that time. It's as simple as that. And then, you know, athletes in training, it's actually a hard one, because they still need to get micronutrients, and they get so focused on macronutrients, of course, and everyone's arguing over how much carbs to eat.
Yeah.
There's no denying that a hard training athlete who's putting in 2 or 3 sessions a day needs more carbohydrate. They have to make sure, again, if they want to be doing this in another 3 or 4 years, that they're still getting micronutrients. And it's hard to fit all the veggies in sometimes when you're so busy hoovering down oats and rice and sweet potato.
Yeah.
And so that's something that I've, you know, working with the more advanced athletes, just something I've tried to keep reminding them of. And, you know, we make use of supplements. There's fantastic green powders and things like that, which really helps.
Yeah.
Because part of the problem is it's harder to eat enough food. And if I put, you know, 2 cups of broccoli on that plate, I've really made it a problem for people. So yeah, green powders certainly helps. Again, nutrient timing, which is simple nutrition science, but maximizing your carbohydrate intake when you need it, and then at the meals furthest from your training load is where you try to maximize healthy fats and vegetables and things like that to sort of get the best of both worlds.
Nice. I think, like, there's a few different elements on that. I think you're completely right that because of the actual amount of inactivity that people have, especially the current kind of crop of members and things like that we would have in the gyms, the challenge is, I think, sometimes really getting the awareness of what they're currently taking in. And I think sometimes there can be, I suppose, maybe a misunderstanding that the macros are vital. Like, a lot of people who now might get into CrossFit and they might be in it 6 months or maybe a year or something like that. And straight away, they're like, okay, cool. I need to start getting on a meal plan. I need to start getting a delivery crew. And they need to start giving me food. And I'm going to stick with this and this and this. And it's going to hopefully work. And then I might get a nutrition coach for me. And then I'm going to get this. When, in theory, like in reality, like you're saying, the basic thing is make sure that you're getting a certain amount of carbs. They're probably post-workout. You need to have a bit more activity in general as much as you possibly can to be able to not necessarily purchase more, but like kind of buying calories on MyFitnessPal kind of thing, you know. But basically, yeah, just trying to, yeah, yeah, you're trying to basically tilt the balance a little bit in your favor rather than just battling for an hour a day. It's like coming into the gym and going, okay, I get to fight this for an hour, and then, oh, damn it. Okay, there's still 23 hours of, like, well, fuck. I'm still kind of caught.
Yeah.
I don't
yeah.
have a chance. Like, I think we yeah. need to give ourselves more of a chance, especially people like that need to give themselves more of a chance, more of an opportunity to fight back, if that makes sense. Whereas the athletes... Go for it.
Yeah, I've used, and to go down another analogy, mm. I often talk about a nuclear reactor. I think that's really what a human body is.
Mm.
And a nuclear reactor can create its own power. And we can do that. You know, we can access stored body fat for a very long time. And so the idea of creating a healthy, safe nuclear reactor, you know, there's steps in place to do that.
Yeah.
And you don't have to keep putting... You don't have to keep putting energy into that reactor to get energy out.
Mm.
You have to just get it functioning perfectly well, and then it's a way, you know, it's this perpetual machine.
Yeah.
And the human body, to a certain extent, is like that. You know, you meet its basic needs, and a lot of those are, again, micronutrient-based.
Mm.
And then you make it as metabolically flexible as possible, which is a bit of a buzzword at the moment. It just means the body's really good at using fat when it should and carbohydrate when it should.
Yeah.
And as an example of someone who's not very metabolically flexible is someone like an old school triathlete,
yeah.
who, you know, gets up in the morning and slugs a liter of Powerade, then goes out and runs for 2 hours, drinks another Powerade, eats some oats, mm. and then it's off to the pool for some swimming, you know, sucks down a couple of goose,
yeah.
has some sushi, and so on, and their bodies are taught to burn only carbs, and they're very inefficient in accessing fat.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't matter, because they just keep kicking the cycle around and around them, just doing so much work and fueling it with the actual food they're putting in. So in this case, it's, you know, it's going against what I said previously. They are actually using the food they're eating at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But they've just taught their bodies to do that. It's very inefficient. Mm-hmm. And they're stuck in a bad loop, you know, and hence you get these diabetic triathletes and full of cavities in their teeth and all sorts of, you know, issues.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, make the human more metabolically flexible. And this applies to athletes and you know, general fitness.
Yeah.
If you're more metabolically flexible, your body works better. You'll be able to draw on the fuels for sport,
mm-hmm.
or for life. You know, it doesn't matter which. And so yeah, make that nuclear reactor just function better.
Yeah.
And calories almost don't matter. Just focus on good proteins, vitamins and minerals from vegetables and healthy fats, and the body will start working right.
Mm.
Because let's face it, if you're trying to get leaner, and it is as simple as calories in, calories out, and how do you go, you know, 20 calories under the line exactly every day
yeah.
for the rest of your life to make sure that you don't gain weight?
Yeah.
It's just impossible. It's right. not, I do believe that is the reason why we lose weight again. It's still that the basic energy
balance
versus energy out. But we achieve that by creating an efficient nuclear reactor, which takes care of that problem for us.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm gonna
take the mental side.
Go for it.
It takes the mental side away. But if you're constantly agonizing achieving that, you're just gonna drive yourself mental. So
yeah.
relax, make your reactor function well, and you'll be happy.
Yeah.
Whether you want to be healthy or you want to dominate sport.
Yeah. And like that actually brought me on to another little point now. I won't keep you much longer now, Darren, but this is going pretty well. In that same motion, if we're trying to make our nuclear reactor as good a quality as possible, and we want to try and fuel it correctly, and we want to make sure that it actually runs itself very, very well. Can I get some of your thoughts on, and I know your approach to training is quite varied personally, and I'd like to think that mine is the same, like just exploring different elements. And I know you're big into stand-up paddleboarding and swimming and like nice little challenges like the rowing challenge, the 100K rowing challenge and stuff like that. Could you speak a little bit about the value of those elements and just the real, I suppose, basic exploratory kind of nature of fitness rather than just the power cleans, burpees, 21:15:9, blah, 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 which are really interesting and fun at times also. But I think a lot of the time it can be overlooked, the actual value of swimming, running, hiking, biking, da-da-da, to really build on the enjoyment and the longevity of those, of maintaining the patience for those nutritional changes to occur. I don't know if you could speak a little bit about the value of the real basics in relation to that.
Yeah, I absolutely could. Well, let's start out with another, you know, very classic CrossFit statement, unknown and unknowable.
Yeah.
That's a big part of why I do things like this, some of these more, I guess, adventurous activities. I just want to be able to be ready to do anything that comes my way.
Yeah.
That is, you know, a core tenet of CrossFit. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, we often overlook just key human function, which is to be able to walk for a very long time.
Yeah.
You know, we fought saber-toothed tigers. There's your ATP end of the spectrum. And then we walked for 3 days to move camp.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't do hard 5Ks. We didn't run marathons.
No.
You know, we didn't do 20-minute AMRAPs. You know, a fight was over in 5 minutes,
yeah,
or less. And then we walked for fucking ages. And it's everyone's doing all the stuff in the middle that we're not really evolved to do.
Yeah.
And it's fun and it's fine to do, but we've got to balance things out. So that's, you know, that's a big part of it for me.
Mm-hmm.
I live in an amazing country. I'm very lucky to be in New Zealand. I should be out in it a lot more. That's, you know, that's something that's really important to me. We pay a fortune in rent to live by the beach. So we make a big effort to
get there.
You know, if I ever get to a point where I realize I haven't walked on the beach for 2 weeks, I think I need to move. You know, I'm wasting money.
Definitely.
So while I'm here, I need to be out amongst it. That's a really big thing.
Exactly.
And if you want to tie it all the way up to the other end of the spectrum, of course, at the games itself, mm-hmm, it's reflected there. If you don't have that well-roundedness with experience in the water, on a bike, running, I mean, the volume of running across the games is insane.
You run
everywhere, every second event, right?
Yeah.
There might be the run, which is the big run, but then you look at how many other events have
so many, like,
run a mile, then do the thing, or five rounds of 800 meters and do some other thing. There's so much running.
Crazy, like.
And I think it's fantastic. There's a perverse side of me that loves seeing the gym-bound CrossFit Games athlete get completely undone.
Yeah, me too. It's great.
Look at that person. They can't ride a bike. They cannot ride a bike. They cannot climb over a hay bale.
Yeah.
I'm not being mean directly to them, of course, but it is very interesting to see that happen. And you know that they've missed some classic and important stuff out of the training. But for the average athlete, it's again, no one comes to the gym and says, I'm joining to go to the CrossFit Games. And they don't even say, I'm joining to get fitter. You know, it's when you talk to them, I'm joining so that I can do cool things.
Yeah.
Whether it's by myself or with family.
Yeah.
And so that's why we're training, is to do cool things. And if you don't think that sitting around on a Sunday morning and going, hey, we should go run up that mountain, or we should, a friend of mine just messaged me last week and said, hey, do you want to stand up paddleboard out to a volcano, run up it, and then paddle back five kilometers each way to the volcano? And it's probably, I think it's a 5 or 10K round trip up and down. And it's just for fun, you know.
We gotta take his hand off. You're like, absolutely.
Dodge ferries and you know, go early in the morning so that there's going to be less boat traffic, and we have to pick the currents and the wind and the tide.
So good.
And but it's not a problem because we're fit enough to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we get access. You know, it opens up a whole new world. When you're fit, you can do this stuff and think of it as fun versus, oh no, you know, that's dangerous. I don't think I could do that, or X, Y, and Z. It's, I could run a marathon tomorrow. I could, you name it, you know, and I'm not going to win it, but I'm going to be able to do it. And that's where we're at with CrossFit. That's what, why it's always existed. And I think, again, a few people have lost sight of that.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'd love to get more people, embracing that stuff and using their fitness to do cool things, have awesome. Adventures.
Nice. I think when I speak to people like yourself, Farron, it's it always reignites my interest in some of those various areas. I always think it, like, this is a little bit offshoot, but I think of anytime I talk to somebody who wants to be quite competitive, I kind of think, how would they get on with an hour long row or marathon row? Would they be able to do that? And they'd be like, whew, geez, that's a bit much, isn't it? And you're like, well, theoretically, if you had to row a marathon, you could row it, like, but then you're related back to actual rowers, and like in Ireland, we've got some really good rowers at the moment, but like I've worked with rowers before, and they do a spectacular volume of training, of actual mileage. Like, they just spend hours and hours and hours rowing. So when if we were to do the same with CrossFit people or CrossFit members, or athletes, and kind of go, look, you need to spend hours and hours doing more and more pull-ups, doing more and more rowing and more running, they're kind of going, oh my god. But that's the difference, I think, between, like you mentioned a good bit earlier, between the regionals kind of wannabes and the actual people that are like, all the chips are in, I'm okay for the next few years, let's see what we got here, kind of thing. That's going to change. That definitely changes quite a bit. Like, if you have to go to Dubai and then you have to go to Asia, and you're struggling to get a spot for the games, and you're like, I've got to pay my sponsors and blah, 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 and all this, then it's a serious business. Like, it's a very different ball game then, compared to being able to stay in your region and maybe get a bit of an appearance, kind of a thing. It's a different ball game, I'd say, there.
Oh, it certainly is. And you actually reminded me of something else that's sort of contained in there. It comes back to some of our previous discussions, but talking about the volume, and the name has just slipped off my tongue, but a pretty famous running coach, I'm sure it was him who said it, he talked about, you know, having a stable of runners or track athletes, and of course they're all very different, and so their training was individualized, and the way he put it was, you know, some athletes had to do, for example, on a training day, 6 times 400 meters, but some athletes, to get the stimulus they needed to adapt, had to do 15 times 400 meters.
Yeah.
Right? And that's just how it was. If they wanted to get better, they had to do more repeats because their bodies didn't respond the same way.
Yeah.
But do you think that the 6 by 400 meter athletes were looking longingly at the training sessions of the 15 by 400 and going, damn, I wish I could do more running. I wish I had to do more running.
Yeah.
And yet in CrossFit, that's exactly what's happening. People are looking at Rich Froning doing 5 session days and going, that looks cool. And it's almost, you know, it's a victim of its own fun.
Absolutely, yeah.
The variance of CrossFit means you can do a lot of different stuff, and people are doing more just because they like it.
Yeah.
At the expense of getting better. And it's insane. And if you say, hey, you could actually get better than you are now by doing half the training volume, what's weird is that a lot of these mid-level athletes would say, no, I want to keep doing what I'm doing because I like it. And it's kind of nuts because they're actually foregoing the improvements they could make.
Yeah, too seductive. The variety is too seductive.
It's a weird conundrum we're in.
It is a challenging one. Like, that's where I think it's very interesting that the direction that it's going at the moment. I think it pretty much had no choice to go that direction, but I think when it comes to the regular member and the people that we would deal with quite regularly, and that you, to an extent, you've got an interesting double life, I think, because you'll be dealing with the very high level athletes, the superstars of the sport, and also regular old Joe and Mary, which I think is a really interesting thing. And it's a, it shows great ability, I think, that you can go back and forth and still have very, very high level athletes performing very well. But also you've got a very smart approach to training in your affiliate. So I think that's fantastic. A couple of small little questions.
The common theme is just helping people do that for longer, you know, just always thinking ways that whatever their goal is, that they can do it for the longest. And you know, I can't claim any of the credit. It's all Yami. Like, if you use Amy Thorazot as an example, you know, she's phenomenal. Her resilience in the sport is a testament both to her as an athlete and her attitude. Yami's programming and just showing, you know, that's what you're after. That's who people should want to be.
Yeah.
Not these flash in the pans, you know, went to the games once.
Yeah.
And then we never hear of them again.
No.
No matter how well they did, if they don't come back the next year, they're not going to make a living from it.
Yeah.
And it's the same for us as regular Joes. We want to do this for a long time, and so that's always the that's always in the back of my mind when I'm thinking about this stuff, no matter who it's for.
Cool. Nice. Darren, I got a couple of final questions for you. I want to disturb your morning coffee an awful lot longer. Do you have any particular particular favorite coaches? Anybody in your past, in your martial arts background or anything like that, that is or in the early days of CrossFit or in university that really sparked it for you? Not necessarily like CrossFit oriented, it could be anything. Any real favorite coaches that helped you on an awful lot?
I could bang out a few just quickly. So I had a martial arts coach towards the end of my time in it who taught a style called multi-style self-defense, which I think is one of the worst names in the world, but it was a precursor to MMA.
Yeah.
We were basically doing MMA before MMA had been invented.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a mix of Wing Chun and kickboxing and Sabat and grappling and Lee Jian Fan and Jeet Kune Do, and it was phenomenal, and it was basically CrossFit for martial arts. Every training session we did something different, and it was fantastic. And we would often spend an hour after class just talking about martial arts, and he was very generous with his time, and I'm very grateful for that. And the CrossFit world, I had a long relationship with Matt Swift, CrossFit Brisbane. He's also a guy who likes to talk, and again, we could spend hours just talking about all manner of things, CrossFit or not.
Yeah.
And he's a very level-headed guy, and thinks a lot about this kind of stuff too. And so I've always learned a lot from him and have a lot of time for him.
Nice, excellent.
And of course, Yami Takana is. Every time we get on the phone, it's hard to get to sleep afterwards because we've kicked off so many ideas and thoughts around the stuff. Again, CrossFit or just life, you know, the perfect measure of coffee for pour over. We go into detail here, but fantastic to talk with someone that smart and that passionate about what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm always learning from him.
Awesome.
So those would be a few of the key ones that stand out for me.
Excellent, great stuff. I would normally ask the kind of favorite book one, but I'm actually curious of your favorite kind of sports documentary. If you are you into those at all?
Sports documentary. Yeah. That is a tough one. You know what? You should have gone with the book.
I'll go with the book after all.
I'm not really that into sport.
Okay.
Not classic sport. I don't even know why. I didn't really play much of it as a kid, and I guess that has something to do with it.
Maybe, yeah.
But, heck, I know there must be something.
That's all good.
And the last one, I mean, I watched the Barkley Marathon.
That's excellent.
Really classified as a sports documentary, but that was certainly a phenomenal insight to human character and mental toughness that was pretty interesting. And the one before that was Icarus, which was, you know, the cycling doping was also fascinating.
Yeah, no, the Barkley Marathon is actually brilliant. I think it's a really excellent one. Very different, but really interesting.
People are willing to come and do that for
so crazy. You know, like, it's nuts.
Almost no reason at all.
Get the crap kicked out of them. It's mental. It's brilliant, but it's mental. It's such a crazy thing. Okay, I will actually get you on one book. What are you reading at the moment?
I'm currently, I've just started 21 Lessons for the 21st Century by Yuval Noah Harari.
Nice.
And he was the guy who wrote Homo Deus and Sapiens.
Excellent.
And so this is his third book. And I'm a big kind of, I don't know if it's the right term, futurist. I'm fascinated by where we're going.
Yeah.
And so that, yeah, those books have been incredibly interesting to read. And you know, see where, I know it's one person's thoughts on where we're going, but I think it's pretty spot on with some of this stuff.
Yeah, I think so. I'm happy to do Sapiens at the moment, and it's fairly serious stuff. Like, it's just excellently done. It's different, but it's excellent.
Yeah, and it has a lot of ties to the nutrition side of things. I think there was a spot where he talked about kind of the moment we went from a tribe of 100 people to 101.
Oh yeah,
it was all over. You know, because then we needed agriculture to feed.
Yeah.
And once we had 1,000 people, we couldn't just banish 900 off to the wilderness and be like, oh, shit, we got it wrong. There's two people in this tribe, and our children are getting shorter, and they're getting holes in their teeth, and there's something wrong, you know, because they were already feeding them more grain than they should have.
Yeah.
Went hunting and gathering away. But that was the end of it, and I just thought that was a really interesting thing. You know, literally from day one, we've been cocking it up.
Yeah.
And so we'll never get back to that. You know, we'll never get back to that. Yeah. So the unfortunate thing is people are trying to grow meat on wire mesh and make tofu taste like chicken. But the problem is, of course, factory farming and population control and all that sort of stuff. But there's no way we can fix that. So instead, we throw money at more technical fixes, which is a problem. And we don't need this podcast on doom and gloom, but that's really it's a really interesting thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think
it's got me thinking about starting a community garden at the gym, for example. Like that's
absolutely
one way we'll try to contribute better is how people grow their own food.
Well, I think that's supposed to. Yeah, I think that's exactly it. Like, I think the reason I started this podcast and the reason I think I coach is we all try and make a little bit of a difference in somebody else's lives or in our own lives via that. We have to try and make a bit more progress. Like, when I read that piece in Sapiens, like, it hit me like a brick. I was like, my God. And I just got this huge downer. I'm like, oh my God, this is desperate. We're crap humans. But then I'm like, well, okay, but these kind of situations always occur. There's always these kind of turning points in all of these areas. So some of them are much more significant than others, obviously, in that kind of context. But I don't think there's any harm in I think we're always pretty good at effing things up as humans. But I also think we definitely realize quickly enough, that was pretty crap, right? We'll try and tidy it up a bit now. But there's definitely pockets of progress. But I think we definitely are getting slower, maybe because of technology. We're actually getting slower to react and getting a little bit more lethargic about our approach to it. That's why there is the need for, I have to get, I'm used to all these 6-week challenges and all of this kind of stuff. Like, it does make it, I suppose, more of a connected environment, that all of these things are wound into the other, and they're just a perpetual feedback loop that it can be difficult to get out of. But sometimes things like CrossFit can be a bit of an antidote, and give us a bit of a better pair of glasses, a rose tinted glasses for the things that we could do.
Absolutely.
You know. So I think that's a really interesting kind of look at it.
Yeah.
Darren, where can we?
It's a weird industry we're in, isn't it? Because we're actually an industry. We're like a narcotics cop. Right? if we're true to it, deep down, we should want our job to disappear.
Yeah. Exactly.
If we were 100% successful, there would be no need for us.
Yeah.
And it's a really weird situation to be in.
Yeah.
And I've, so if we're true to what we want to do, we should be trying to eliminate our job. And those 6 week challenges are attempts to maintain the job.
It's interesting.
It's an interesting one.
But even thinking of that on some of the members that and people I've spoken with before, and they're like, oh, you should. If somehow I'd do the workouts and they'd be like, oh, how'd you get on today? And I was like, oh, did this and da da da. And like, I got fifth in the leaderboard, and they're like, oh, touch be able for this. And I'm like, well, I said, yeah, this is what I can do. Like, I'm not trying to go to the games. I'm not trying to be this athlete. And I always say, I'm like, well, if my athletes are not better than me, I'm not a very good coach. They should be beating me if that's the case. Like, hopefully not by much now, mind. I like still like to beat them here and there, but but definitely on the whole, they should be better than me. Exactly. So that's an interesting one. Darren, where can people find out about you? Any of the Insta links and the book faces and things like that? Where's the main
places? Pretty much don't go on Facebook anymore. which has been interesting, but the gram, Darren Ellis 75, nice. The grand year of my birth. That's and nice. Small project going on with the affiliate program, which is Sherpa.coach.
Oh, yes.
Nice. Both website and on Instagram. Nice. And that's just an attempt to kind of help affiliates who are evolving to program away from the game side of things to more longevity based stuff.
Great stuff.
It's very, very fresh. We're slowly getting there.
Cool.
It's a bit of a passion project at the moment. Excellent. And I hope to sort of get some more traction with that.
Nice. Excellent. And you still own a couple of gyms in New Zealand?
Across New Zealand.
Yeah.
And my partner Krista has Reebok CrossFit 09. We've got the east and the west sides of the city sewn up.
Nice. Excellent. If I ever get over to New Zealand, I'll definitely drop in and say hello. It'd be awesome to get chatting again.
Got a spare bedroom.
Sweet. Darren, thanks so much for joining me. I'm gonna leave you to do now. I know you've got a day ahead of you, so really, really appreciate it. And I've no doubt people will enjoy the conversation. You've been a legend, so thanks for joining me.
Porrick, it's been a pleasure talking to you, mate.
Great stuff.
Okay, folks, so you've just been listening to episode 37 of the Humble Coach Podcast with Darren Ellis. Hopefully you guys enjoyed the show. Darren's a fantastic coach and a really, really smart dude. So you'll hopefully get a lot from the conversation. If you'd like to check out any of the other episodes that we have on the Humble Coach Podcast, you can go to thehumblecoach.podbean.com at our base on podbean.com. But you can also find us on Stitcher, iTunes, and on Spotify. Hopefully you guys have a fantastic day, and I'll chat to you guys very soon.